Welcome back to the programme. Now, don't weep, because this is about reality in people's lives. Individual people who will be caught in the middle of whatever direction we go in. We hear a lot from experts and politicians about Brexit, but what about people working on both sides of the border every single day? At this stage of the Brexit process, what are they worried about? Well, we heard some of them earlier on. And what are they going to do to plan for life after the 29th of March? And we're going to talk to Eamon Fitzpatrick, Edel McBride shortly, but I'll start with Ronnie Malone of Templetown Transport, who has travelled from his base in Carlingford, for which thank you very, very much, and you didn't need a green card to get here, to join us in studio. Give me an insight into a typical day for you running your transport business.
Well, at the moment, it's very simple. Like, if we load into a load in Dublin and we want to deliver in Belfast, it's just go down. You know, you can book in at 8 o'clock in the morning. You have no problem. You can be there. But go back to the years before that. That if you wanted to go there, you had to go to the customs, right? And there's like, if you want to deliver, say on a Monday morning, maybe you loaded in Dublin on the Friday, to make that delivery on a Monday morning, you had to clear your customs on the Friday evening. Right, which used to be, if we didn't leave Dublin at 5 o'clock, maybe you get delayed with traffic, you couldn't make the customs. So what we had to do then at that stage was to actually get the load cleared down on a Saturday morning instead. And then you'd use one of the depots then, and or friends you had in Newry, and when you had your load cleared, you'd drop the trailer in Northern Ireland. Right, and then you could make your delivery then for your 8 o'clock on the Monday morning.
Right.
So like, that's going to be a big change and a big cost factor.
In what way?
Because you're going to have to pay someone on a Saturday morning, which we did in the past. You pay someone a Saturday morning to clear your load. Like, you had three stops to make. You had to go into your, first of all, you had to go into your agent to get your paperwork. Then you had to go to your, to the custom point on your export end, which is at the border of Carrigarnon.
When you were doing this, you were driving yourself.
Yeah. And then at that stage, then you had to go to the import side in Northern Ireland and clear your papers there.
And what kind of times were involved?
You talk about 3 hours, maybe. And it depends. If it's a straight load, like a load of timber or something like that, there's only one entry.
Yeah.
But if you have a groupage load...
What do you mean by a groupage load?
There could be bicycles, there could be prams, there could be clothes, there could be anything on it.
You could have a mixture,
you could have
in
a mixture
other words.
Of anything. They could,
and they all have to be cleared separately?
There's a separate entry for each item. So, like, if you have 50, there's 50 entries compared to a load of timber, one entry. So it all depends on what's on your trailer, and then the time it, and then you'd get, if you went into taxi car, right, and you ended up above and you hadn't the right date on it, your man would tell you go back to the queue. So we're the same when you go into the customs datum, you'd end up right, the date wasn't saying right, go back. Next you come back in, there's another 20 in front of you. So, like, they're the simple wee things. It could take you 3 hours.
Right.
And then you land down the other side, then it was the same. It was a long day.
Right.
It was a long day.
And when did it change?
It wasn't easy, but like, my father would have went through it, and the local guys around me said it. At that stage, it was all pen and paper.
Yeah.
So, like, it was a slower process.
Of course.
And you'd land in at the customs, and you had to have maybe the manifest, like, or the bill of lading, and if you hadn't a hard copy in your hand, they wouldn't clear the load for you. So then, but as I... When I really come into it myself, it got a wee bit easier because we're really all computerised. So it left it a wee bit simpler.
Yeah.
But still, if you had the 50 entries, it's still going to be a problem. And if it comes back, I can't see that changing.
Can you see when you hear Boris Johnson and those saying, oh, nonsense with technology, all these things can be done?
It'll be okay if you have a straight load. And listen, I was thinking about Brexit there on the dock on Tuesday, and... In fairness, it came across very well, but it's very simple with the one entries. But like, the coming with the groupage load, and if I end up at 14 bicycles for say the like of yourself, right? You have no VAT number, you have no TAN number, you have nothing, right? So you literally have to either have the VAT paid up front, right, or else I'd say the bought to wait till someone comes and pays the money, and that's what's going to come up. And that can only maybe one pallet on the trailer. The rest of it could be streamlined.
Right.
But it's the one pallet, and if the customers decide to take it off. Where is it on the trailer?
Yeah. Right.
That's the thing, we won't know where it is.
Let me go to Edel McBride, who's on the line from New York. What are you doing there, Edel, first of all?
Good morning, Marie.
Morning to you.
And I'm feeling very privileged to be out here. as an ambassador for something that we do at home. And I'm also feeling like very privileged to be part of such a group of Irish entrepreneurs that while we didn't come out, we're coming from different experiences. But we're here this week really looking for business to bring back home. For my own part, I offer core workshops with a company called knittingtours.com. So that's a new element of the Irish tourism group.
The line isn't brilliant. What was that word you used?
Privileged to be part of the
group you were talking about.
Oh yes, Irish Tourism Group. They're a Limerick company, County Limerick.
Right.
And they have something called Knitting Tours, and we've been working with that. It happened as a one-off event, and I suppose very lucky in the way that things have rolled out in the last year or 6 months in particular.
Okay, can it's I just clarify, Edel, because you didn't let the folks know. You're involved in fashion, but most particularly knitwear. And you travel both sides of the border. You're in the knitwear business in Donegal, yes, and part in Derry. How does that work?
Yes. So we make everything in Donegal. My business initially was set up in Derry. We've always had a retail element in Derry, bar a few years. So we've come through everything from petrol bombs on the windowsill of the boutique to being asked to leave for bomb scares. So we've come through all of those years. And I'm you know, delighted to say my three eldest children between 23 and 29 really only know peace times. That's all that they know. And they know opportunity. And they're very happy to be located and now living independently in Derry. Our business retails at the Craft Village in Derry City, and that's half of our everything that we produce is really going to a tourist customer coming through the Craft Village in Derry City.
Right. Now, you had the shop in Derry, and then you left for a while and then went back again. Why did all that happen?
Well, really, by between 89 and 94, we absolutely loved our Derry shop. It was somewhere visited by even Mary Robinson and Joan Bergen, and I have a wonderful visitor book from there. But I was about to have my third baby, and the actual location we were in was bursting at the seams. So a year previous to that, I'd taken part in a cross-border program with other companies from Donegal and Derry. And I suppose it was a little more successful for the Donegal side because in 1993, I relocated most of the work to there. So by 94, the shop in Derry was a little bit of a strain to keep going and
right,
the young children and all of it.
Yeah, I get that. Now, can I come back to studio here as well? Karen, you're over and back, but you came back from the UK because of the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, in essence, I came back originally to work in Dublin, but my decision to go back to Northern Ireland was all based around the peace process. And then to looking at my family and how we would manage in the future. When your children are young, you can still move, so we had that option. But we were reassured by the Good Friday Agreement. And maybe we were naive going back at the time to think that there would have been sort of international investment that would have assisted with the process. And unfortunately, Northern Ireland is one of the poorest economies in the UK. So for us, and the implications for the Good Friday Agreement, I was talking to an Etia researcher during the week, and it was interesting. I was in Dublin a number of weeks ago, and when you live through the troubles as a young person, you don't really process it. You just live it. You're young and
it's ordinary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
that's the shocking bit about it. Yeah,
absolutely. And it was a real reality call for me recently when I heard a helicopter in Dublin and it was hovering. And there was something just irritating me and I didn't really know what it was. And it suddenly dawned on me that as a child, when you heard a helicopter hovering, that there was trouble. There was somebody in trouble or there was going to be trouble. And it was a sort of like a gut reaction. You know, I've lived in Northern Ireland a fair portion of my life, but it didn't really dawn on me to the extent of what one single sound can actually provoke.
Or and evoke,
the
yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And the memory that brought that back. And I genuinely would call upon all the parties involved and the signatories to the Good Friday Agreement to be really cautious, to remember that it's not about politics, it's not about business.
Or one-upmanship.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's purely to create a peaceful state where we can just live our lives in peace.
And I think it's also about, it's all of those things, and it's also about building on what we have. So the first 10 years after the Good Friday Agreement were 10 of the most economically beneficial years in Northern Ireland that we'd ever seen. All the data shows 10 really good years. The financial crash hit, and yes, it's been a more difficult 10 years, but actually the curve is starting to show. We have more investors coming into Belfast. There's a really, really hopeful economic corridor now between 8 councils in Ireland cooperating together to help actually move people, goods, services across those areas between Dublin in Belfast. So, you know, I think it's really important that politicians understand that what they voted for in the referendum, which was the other referendum that we talk about less these days, the people of Northern Ireland voted for, that referendum, which is just as important as the referendum to leave the European Union that was voted on, that actually it's being delivered, Marion. You know, people are delivering it. Now, that said, it is still difficult. There are still security situations. And just, again, these are PSNI figures. In 2018 in Northern Ireland, 2 security-related deaths, 39 shooting incidents, 17 bombing incidents, 50 injured in paramilitary beatings, 17 in paramilitary shootings, 39 firearms, 3,273 rounds of ammunition found. I could go on. This is still a part of the UK that is vulnerable in lots of ways from a security point of view. If we forget that, we forget it at our peril. And I think that's what everybody, we're all looking at each other around the table. I know this is radio. All of us who move back and forth, we're nodding our heads when we're hearing what it was like. And we're just all thinking, my goodness, what can we all do to make sure we don't go back to that?
Right. There was a kind of a sense that we got complacent about the Good Friday Agreement for a while, well, Hugh, wasn't there?
So someone of my age who wouldn't really remember the Troubles that particularly well, you know, I've grown up and I've become an adult in a time of peace in Northern Ireland. And like I was in Belfast this week for Fianna Fáil and the SDLP announcing their new partnership. And, you know, I get the Enterprise train from Connolly Station.
Right.
You cross the border, you don't even notice it. And you land in Belfast 2 hours later and then you come back and it's frictionless. It is the very definition of frictionless. And, you know, there is talk now that if there is a hard border, that you would have customs officers having to come on the train, probably.
But you know, the interesting thing is, I don't remember them coming on. I used to go up and down.
Yeah.
We used to go up and down a fair bit to do programmes.
Yeah.
But I was never stopped.
But at a time now, I suppose, when we have the European Union and we have, you know, these trade barriers and stuff that and, you know, customs regulations, that you have a situation where customs officers would feel compelled to come on trains to make sure there isn't any illegal smuggling going on.
I presume there was probably a lot going on anyway during
the Troubles. Yeah.
And I wonder why these patriots want a hard border, presumably because it's very good for business.
Well, that's a different debate. Yeah, so you have some...
For smuggling business.
Yeah, you have some groups in some of the papers today. I think Sarah is their name, and there's a piece in the Sunday Times where they tell Andrew Gilligan that they want a border to be as hard as hell, presumably because it creates a situation where they can create chaos, and that can create a whole new debate about United Ireland, but also obviously to benefit potentially through criminality.
Yeah, it's just so very hard to be... It's so very hard to take seriously that they're interested in a United Ireland or anything for the benefit of Ireland.
I think they're interested in money. Groups, I think, that feel as if the peace process, that the Good Friday Agreement hasn't worked for them. I mean, why is there no assembly in Northern Ireland for the last 2 years? Because it's been collapsed by Sinn Féin and the DUP being at loggerheads. Why are they at loggerheads? Because they're both trying to appeal to their base. And within Sinn Féin, there's a school of thought within the grassroots of the party that the Good Friday Agreement has not worked for them, power sharing has not worked for them, and that they need to create a new conditions by which they can bring
about
United
Ireland. Sorry, I thought you were referring to the so-called dissidents. I didn't think you were talking about the mainstream parties.
I'm talking about a cohort of people within the mainstream parties who believe that power sharing, the Northern Assembly, the Northern Executive, has not worked for them. And has not worked to deliver what they ultimately want.
Which is a united Ireland.
Yeah. And ultimately you have two sides who are diametrically opposed, because one is pushing for a united Ireland, one is pushing to change the status quo, and the other side, represented primarily by the DUP, are pushing to maintain the status quo. So that kind of...
And so their analyses would be completely different. I mean, Sinn Féin would say, and say very strenuously, they've done it many times, that they had negotiated a deal. And that they thought it was all systems go, and then the DUP backed out.
Yeah, that's right. Simultaneously, the DUP would say that they thought that they were close to a deal, I think, in 2017, late 2017, and they feel as if Gerry Adams pulled back Sinn Féin. So that's all politics at play.
And you know what I'm going to say, given that I work in local government in Northern Ireland, is that local government is working, and Sinn Féin, the DUP, work day in, day out in local government. Given the time of year that it is and the Six Nations just about to start, I read a really good piece by in The Guardian this week where Trevor England, so the Ulster former Irish player, talked about rugby, and he talked about identity in Irish rugby, and how we were all very relaxed about identity, was how he described it, even 20, 30 years ago. And it just made me think about and reflect about, identity had stopped being an issue. Nobody asks whether you're Irish or British, because the Good Friday Agreement means that you can choose. You can choose whichever, or you can choose none, or you can just choose. So there's a generation of young people in Northern Ireland that don't get asked all the time who you are and about your identity.
Right.
And all of a sudden, that is starting to creep back in. And lawyers are now starting to advise people. I haven't had legal advice myself, but I have anecdotally only this week from somebody who's from the South and who's lived in the North for 30 years and has been contacting the Home Office and was told by the Home Office it might be a good idea to apply for British citizenship. So now, this is anecdotal, but there are some interesting pieces, and there's a piece today in one of the papers from a lawyer talking about how the Irish government is now putting in place formal legal arrangements in relation to citizenship for Irish people, and urging and saying that the British government needs to do the same, or the UK government needs to do the same. So all of a sudden the issue of citizenship, which we thought was off the table, other words, was resolved by the Good Friday Agreement, is now suddenly coming back to pass.
Okay, let me go to Monaghan now. Eamon Fitzpatrick of Fitzpatrick Fuel and Hardware. Your business is in Clonus, there for 20 years, and it straddles the border. Talk to me about the straddling of the border and how that'll be affected.
Good morning, Maureen.
Morning to you.
Maureen, we would have a yard straddling the border, both sides, northern and southern. And as of now, we have no problems. No, it's a free-for-all. We can come and go as we please or whatever. But I suppose the consequences of March the 29th, what happens after that, we're all in the, you know, we don't know what's happening or whatever. And there's nobody there to tell us what is, you know, what may be happening either.
Well, you were saying that at one stage you were looking at somebody mixing feed that was going in the south, that was for to be fed to animals in the north, because it's just the next feed.
Yes,
field.
This man was just, you know, he was feeding in his own yard, the yards in the south, and his storage for his silo and his meal and whatever's in the south. And just practically 20 yards away, he was drawing it down to cattle in Northern Ireland and feeding it. And at the minute, there's no problem with that either way. But, you know, if a hard bother comes about, I don't know, the cattle could get hungry very quick. So they could.
They could, mind you, they might get assistance from the people that I was talking about earlier on. Anyway, what are your biggest worries?
Well, I suppose the lack of knowledge as to what's going on. You know, like, I suppose I left school when I was 13 and built up a business to what it is today. And, like, Maureen, there's nobody, like, you can go to all the seminars or whatever and ask questions, whatever, but there's nobody there to give you answers. Like, I've even heard it there lately. I was talking to a fella there the other day, and he's in something similar business than myself. And he was telling me that his one of his banks asked him to get a Brexit report done. And he asked him then, who would I go to get that done?
Yeah.
And he kind of he said the boy shrugged his shoulders, you know, as much to say, I don't know, but you go to your accountant maybe and ask them.
That's business for you.
You know,
sorry, one of our participants here is banging the middle of all that.
So, like, you know, he was left in limbo. You know, he was asked for something that was going to obviously cost him a few thousand or whatever. And at the end of the day, not having the correct answer, because nobody knows what the outcome of it is going to be.
Nobody knows. This side of the water, far side of the water. And sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off out there because I'm fascinated by how you are actually going to proceed. And I presume as it gets closer and closer and closer, people will get more and more and more anxious about not knowing what is ahead of them.